So often, the story is focused on the person that's going through something. What about the person that's living with them? What about the kids? What about the spouse, the partner? The other side of the story. Today, we learn more about being married to a hoarder. Thanks for listening and subscribing to Learning More Season 3 here. Oh, man. You know, I hope you enjoyed last week's show. I enjoyed putting it together. It's one of those ones where I've listened to again, and it's like an hour long, so it's taken up a lot of my time to put that together and to listen to it several times, because the thing is, I picked up something new when I listened to it afterwards. Man, The Hollywood Hypnotist. How cool was that to have that as my first debut episode of season 3? It was fantastic. So thank you again, Kevin. I've actually got a chance to chat with him a little bit since then, and fantastic. Hopefully you remembered to go to the website and check out more information about him. Just fantastic. Anyway, okay. As I'm coming down off of the high from that show, man, we've got another one here that I'm excited to talk to and talk about. It's about being married to a person that is a hoarder, right? Like, okay, we all collect some stuff, right? Like, we collect things, but then sometimes that gets a little bit overboard, right? Like, I went to one house over the summer, like one of those Airbnb things, and they had like this little hoarder area, really, like in the garage, right? A little closet that was closed off. I kind of peeked inside because, you know, that's what you do when you go to an Airbnb, right? I'm not the only one, right? Anyway, I look in there and there's just all kinds of stuff. And then they've got some old bikes as well, like just in the garage that, like, you can't use these. They're going to fall apart. We tried, and my wife's bike did fall apart, but didn't work out so well for her. But keeping these things, like, why do you keep these things? What's in it, right? Like, what's in it for you? Why are you hoarding these things? But more importantly, what about the spouse? What about the person that has to live with the person that has all of these things in their house, right? Like, I'm sort of the opposite of a hoarder. Like, I don't have anything. I'm a minimalist, I guess. You know, like, having a bunch of stuff around me, like, kind of makes me nervous. I don't like it. I don't like the feeling of having stuff everywhere. And so I can't imagine being married to a hoarder. My guest today was actually married to a hoarder. Today, I am joined by Deborah Greenhut. Deborah, thank you so much for joining me today.
My pleasure. It's great to be here with you. Thank you.
Okay. I got to ask right up front here, are you a hoarder?
I am neither a hoarder nor not a collector. So I do collect some things, and clutter doesn't bother me as much as it might you, but it's gotten worse over time, the fear of clutter.
So. Oh, yeah. Well, I right now I'm staring at a stack of papers over here, and I've got to do something about that. That's just how I am. I'll get to that maybe after the podcast here. Okay. I'm bringing you on the show because you've actually written a book. Can you tell us a little about the inspiration for this book?
All right. Well, the story is based on my own 35-year marriage to a man who hoarded and suffered apparently from a variety of mental disorders, which only grew worse over time. I published it as a novel for various privacy reasons, and there's a family involved, so I
gotcha.
Felt it was better to make these into fictional characters. And that also gave me an opportunity to write a more literary story than I might have if I had stuck to the memoir. So
the book is called The Hoarder's Wife, and it's a novel. It's available at deborahgreenhut.com. It's also available, of course, on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, you know, all those typical places where you find a book. Okay, so you were actually, though, a hoarder's wife, and that was the inspiration for this. Now, first, let's talk about, how did you recognize the signs of the person becoming a hoarder?
Well, it probably started before I met my husband in his case. And I don't know that I interpreted what I was seeing as hoarding so much as this is a messy person. He can't organize himself. Mm-hmm. And I was a pretty neat person. In fact, at one point he told me he was worried that I was going to be too neat and that we wouldn't be able to live together. And that proved to be prophetic, but the marriage lasted quite a while before it just became too difficult to do that. I when the first time we went out on a date, he said I had a choice between a cluttered car and his BMW. And I would have chosen the motorcycle, but I was getting over a tennis injury, so I'd had a cast on my foot. So he actually picked me up in the cluttered car, and it was quite something. He was an engineer and a professor, and I just thought, oh, okay, absent-minded professor, that's what this is. Right. And I really kind of wrote it off, but over the years, it became really clear that he simply couldn't throw things away.
You know, I've seen some of those like hoarder cars, right? Like, and I don't know. I'm generalizing here. I don't know if it's hoarders that are, you know, have these cars or not. But I passed by some cars that you've got like food bags and old snacks, fast food from, you know, days before, all of that. Was that what you were seeing there?
I didn't see all of that at that point. It was mostly student papers. And oh, okay. Since I was a graduate student and he was a professor, I didn't really think so much of it at the time. I had a lot of papers too. I didn't happen to live out of my car the way he seemed to be with his papers, but I did have them on my desk. So I don't think I didn't put it together that this was going to be a huge problem for us.
Gotcha. Okay. So you're starting to recognize some things, but maybe not paying full attention to those things as the relationships develop there. But I'm assuming it got worse as time went on and you started to notice more things, right?
Yes, there are actually levels of hoarding. So some people at that level of early clutter are already hoarders, but it would not be easy to tell, you know, a collector from a hoarder, although I suppose there were some signs. It's what you're seeing once the food gets into it or the house becomes impossible to walk around is a level 5 hoarder. So there are a lot of stages in between that early just can't throw out papers thing and the later stages where your house is impassable and unhealthy. So it becomes a horror story if you are unable to intercept this a lot sooner.
Yeah, it sort of reminds me of this lady that lived up the street from me where I was growing up. She was, well, you know, I hate to say it, but we called her the crazy cat lady because she had so many cats in her house. And then when she passed, there were several disaster cleanup trucks, you know, like they go into like, you know, fire water damage because there was so much damage to her house from the cats. She never cleaned up after them. There was mold. There was all kinds of stuff. They almost had to like knock down the entire house in order to make it inhabitable again for somebody else. So you could see where this becomes just this real big problem. I'm sure that one was a level 5 or maybe greater at that point. But how do you know? How do you know when you're talking to a person that they're just starting out to, maybe they're just collecting things or maybe they're starting at level 1 and it's going to increase. How did you know?
Well, my husband didn't hoard animals, although he didn't mind the presence of bugs and some wildlife from the outside. We lived in a wooded area and a lot of animals started to come down the chimney and it wasn't at all a bother to him. But that was a little bit later on in the story. He would write it off as I was a nature counselor. I love nature. So what's the difference if it's inside or outside? But the bugs and the mice and started to become a real problem for me.
Yeah. I could see that for sure. I can't imagine even dealing with that. I'm having problems with the stack of papers here. How did you talk to your husband about this? What did you say to him?
You know, it was an evolving failure, I would say. If I said he had too many papers and we really needed to straighten them up, he would say, well, you have papers too, and yours are in filing cabinets, and I just don't see any difference. And you know, I'd be looking at stacks of paper around us that were becoming obstacles to walking through a living room. If he had kept it in one room, maybe I wouldn't have reacted that way, but it finally just took over much of the house. I thought maybe if we bought a bigger house, we could finally have enough space for all of the things. And for many years, I just deluded myself about how intractable the problem had become. And at the time, hoarding wasn't looked at quite the same way. We're going back about 20 years to the diagnosis here for him. It was looked at as an aspect of maybe OCD or ADHD, and it was not classified as a disorder of its own. But that changed in 2013 when they started to call it a disorder, but that was too late for us. So a long series of marital arguments about space were the history of the marriage, really. And I know my children would at various times try to clean up for him, and he would be devastated and confused if his things were moved or put into storage bins or anything else we could think of to try to make the house more livable. And we couldn't understand him is really what it finally came to. And it was kind of heartbreaking. And he was a very angry person by the end of it. And that was really what propelled me to leave. I'm sorry to say that I might have stayed had it not been for the anger, because I did love him. And I kept thinking, people can change and grow and, you know, be better versions of themselves. And unfortunately, he just wasn't able to make those moves.
You know, I didn't know that kids were involved. Are your kids showing signs of hoarding?
No, they're actually pretty neat. I think I can't say they're not obsessively clean, but they keep their own possessions neat. Their homes don't look like a mess. They have a healthy respect for their bodies and, you know, taking care of themselves. So I think they were repulsed by what was happening. And, you know, probably at a very early age decided this was not for them somehow. But we didn't really talk about it a lot. So this is something they, you know, they crafted for themselves.
Well, it's great that they came out okay. You know, I mean, you never know. Growing up in tough situations, you never know how things are going to turn out. So it's fantastic that everything is good with them. You know, I want to say at this point in the show, what we're talking about here, and I love learning about different things, right? Like, that is the whole principle behind this show. But I also want to tell you that this should not substitute for professional advice. You know, if you're going through this, if your kids are going through this, you're like seeing this anywhere, or you're going through this yourself where you think you might have a problem with hoarding or any other mental health condition, please talk to a professional. Like, you know, listening to podcasts and learning about it is fantastic, but I do urge you to talk to somebody. Also, I got to tell you at this point, we will be talking about suicide later in the podcast. And I want to bring that up now. And if that's something that you don't want to listen to, then turn off the podcast. You can listen to last week's again, or do something else. I like to keep it light on the show, right? I like to have fun. But in this case, we're talking about a very serious topic. And for you, if you are facing any kind of mental health uncertainty, please call the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline. All you have to do is dial 988. It's a new line that's set up. It's right there. It's just three digits away from you right now. Okay, that said, we're not doctors, but I do want to talk a little about the symptoms, or at least the early symptoms that you identified. What should we be looking for when thinking that somebody is potentially a hoarder?
Yeah, I think this, again, is not a professional opinion, but I would describe it as a disturbing frustration with cleaning. I mean, my husband disallowed, I had found someone who would help me to clean the house, and he wouldn't allow this person to come in. And when I insisted, he would hide this person's cleaning supplies. He thought he could do it better, and he would never get around to it. So there's a procrastination with what are considered ordinary tasks by most homeowners. A lot of repairs needed to be done that he couldn't seem to get to. So if you see a lot of putting off of just general maintenance tasks, whether they're personal maintenance tasks or home ownership, that's probably a sign that there's something along those lines going on. If there's an accumulation, say, I mean, my husband would go and buy nails and hammers, and there would be hundreds of them in the basement to do a particular project, never get the project done, leave the hammers in the basement. So all that stuff began to accumulate. Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm going to talk to you about, I knew this couple, they were born, you know, during the Great Depression, and they actually, they owned some apartment buildings, and in those apartment buildings, they would go gather the stuff that people would leave behind, and they would put it in their basement, right? And it was like a warehouse in their basement. It was actually kind of awesome, like all the random stuff that they would do. But when you would go over, they would take you downstairs and say, yeah, if you want anything, just take it. Now, they did that because it was sort of like a just a nice gesture trying to help other people out. But then also with the whole, I guess, depression mindset of everything's a scarce resource.
Nice gesture. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. They would want to give people various things when they would go over to the house, right? So where's the line here, right? Like, I'm looking at this and thinking, oh, well, yeah, they're not collectors. They're just trying to help people out by not throwing away and creating more waste and getting rid of these things. And it was pretty useful stuff. So where's the line? Where's the line here between a collector and somebody that's being helpful and somebody being a hoarder?
Well, some people draw a line where if you have museum quality things and you the upkeep is very fine and that they're never dusty and they're displayed properly and you can see them, that's a collector. And no, that's probably not hoarding. But I wanted to go back a couple of paragraphs ago. You mentioned the depression. And now it's believed, though, that hoarding comes from some kind of trauma. And they're finding a lot of descendants of depression babies actually do hoard, that it becomes a family thing. They actually think that kind of experience, that or a genocide or a Holocaust, can rewire your DNA. And that trait of hoarding and trying to hold on to things becomes very powerful in someone's life. Now, that's still, there's some NIH studies about this, but nobody's, you know, made it a definitive connection. But there's a lot of argument that trauma is really the reason that people do these things. So while my husband had a lot of excuses and explanations, he couldn't really get at the real reason why he had to have these things. And his own parents were part of the Holocaust as refugees, and they never let him have his own bedroom. So I actually talked about this in the novel, that we learned that he never had his own space in his house, and he always had to fold up his bed every morning so everybody could use the dining room table. And to me, that was just clear as day why this was happening. I could draw a straight line because he would never allow a table to not have things on it. He never wanted to see an empty surface or an empty table in our house.
Wow.
And that, I can't see any more clear connection than that. Yeah. But it is more trauma-based than some kind of response to other learning disabilities that people do have.
Mm-hmm.
You know, although they can occur together.
But. Yeah, yeah. Now, I actually did a show, very similar to this. I talked with Mark Woolen. He wrote a book on inherited family trauma. This is something where, you know, your great-grandparents went through the Great Depression. So you might hoard stuff years later and not even make that connection. But because of epigenetics and this inherited trauma, you are now doing these things. I mean, it's amazing. I got to plug that show because I loved talking to that guy. If you've never read that book from Mark Woolen, please do go check it out. It's amazing. And I got to interview him, a few seasons back. I'll put a link to the show so you guys can check it out. Definitely something worth listening to if you haven't done that yet. Okay, so enough of the plugging here. Let's get back to the podcast. Here's what I'm thinking. There's these questions that pop up in my mind. I write them down here earlier when we were talking about the kids. I thought, well, you know what? Kids are bringing people home. You're bringing people home. You're trying to have, you know, parties and get-togethers and bring friends over. How was that? If you've got stuff all over the place, stuff on tables, stuff on chairs, no place for people to sit, how does that work when you're trying to bring friends and family over? Your kids are trying to bring friends over after school or whatever it is. How is that?
Yeah, it's kind of a dirty little secret. I mean, there are whole studies of what's called in the literature doorbell shame, where children just dread that the doorbell will ring and a friend might want to come over and see. Mm. And I've had moments of that. I had moments of that myself, trying not to let people come into the house. And we had some friends who stuck with us through all of it, I will say. And they just closed their eyes when they came into the house. But they stopped coming over. They would prefer that we came to their house. Yeah. So there were subtle things that had happened even before it became too difficult to be to be there anymore. But it's a very complex phenomenon.
And, you know, back then, it's probably people didn't even realize what this was. Now it's like it's all over like reality TV and whatnot.
And one of the reasons I wrote the book was that I was watching those shows. And at first, I didn't connect with it at all. But when I started to, I realized there's another person with that hoarder who is not getting any attention from the show. And this is the person who's really overtly suffering. I mean, they may have a nice, you know, kind of what can I do smile on their faces, but they're the people who are being not only inconvenienced, but their health is at risk. Their livelihood may be at risk because my husband was throwing checks under tarpaulins on the porch and just not cashing them.
Oh, wow.
You know, he hoarded everything and he didn't want to give anything away or do ordinary functions with it. So these kinds of things are what happen. And the people who are living with it just don't get a lot of airtime. They're not the interesting part, I'm sure, from a TV point of view. But there are a lot of stories there. So I'm not just one.
Yeah, we only hear the stories. So like, you know, from one perspective. So to hear it from your perspective is very interesting. I love that you wrote this book and I love that you're sharing this story. What I always wonder is when you're going through this relationship, it's very difficult. But then I think about afterwards, like, you know, like dating life afterwards or just friends afterwards, like how do you begin to trust people again?
Well, I think it took me quite a while to trust the world around me again. Having lived in such an uncomfortable place for so long, I was so grateful when I moved into my own apartment here. And the first night was just an experience of freedom like I had never had before. You know, I finally felt that I was free. And, you know, that after years of confinement, it's difficult at first to allow yourself to just move about and go about your business. And I really thought at first I would never write about it. I just wanted to close the door and say, okay, that happened. Now I have this life and this is what I want to write about or focus on. And then when my husband passed away, I realized, no, there are some things that really need to get said, and he's not here, so I don't have to upset him by putting this out there. But I really feel I must speak up because so many people are being abused by it. There's no mm-hmm. other way to put it.
Well, it's fantastic, like I said, that you're speaking up and sharing your story. Now, this story did take a tragic turn, both in your novel and in your real life with the passing of your husband. Let's talk about that a little bit.
Sure. You know, the book opens with Ludwig Berg's suicide. So, and that is also something that happened in my own life. My husband did die by suicide, which was after the divorce and pretty tragic for the family. So I put it at the opening of the book because the book is about the family and the hoarder's wife, not although it's a larger than life presence, so he's very much in there. But I opened with that because I wanted to dispense with the idea that this was going to get better very early, so that people would know that. So it is a kind of sad retrospective on the one hand, but I also tried to show that the wife had lots of ambitions for her life that she kept trying and trying to overcome what was going on at home to have that. So it's kind of a story of disappointed expectations, I think, all around. But at the same time, I learned an awful lot about myself from first writing a memoir and thinking about why this happened. What were the things that I contributed to the party, or what did I bring into the marriage that was blindsiding me to what was actually going on and how to fix it.
So since the story is written as a novel and there's a character for you, how much of that character is what you did versus what you wish you did or aspirations of what you did?
Well, I was trained to be a classical pianist when I was a child, but I decided that wasn't for me. But I made the main character a classical musician. She's a harpist, where I was a pianist. So, and I thought that would also give me some kind of literary range to show in a more concrete way the frustrated expectations. I was a teacher of English. I have a PhD in English. So it's hard to talk about words the same way you can talk about sounds. So I found it a little easier to articulate what was missing or happening for her by using music, and how many times she tried to get a career going by performing or trying to create some music, and how frustrated that became because he couldn't arrange his life in order to accommodate two careers. Mm. So, which was something my husband had promised me, but he was always so disorganized. We couldn't, the time management thing just became very difficult. So,
okay. So I've been thinking about this just as household disorganization, but this is actually disorganization about timelines and everything else.
Yeah.
Just yeah. everything.
Yeah, toward the end of his life, he was becoming, I think it was very difficult for him. He was still teaching and he was close to 70, but he was having a lot of trouble working anymore. So my suspicion, although that's not what we found when we went for a diagnosis, was that something had happened to him physically that was impairing his ability, because he was very high functioning apart from the hoarding issue. But he seemed not to be able to coherently present a class anymore. And that was different from his whole life before that. But that was something that the therapist didn't want to factor in at the point where we were supposedly getting some help. And I'm not sure, something got missed somewhere in our real life. And I tried to convey some of that in the book. But okay. That wasn't my main focus, was not to worry, not to focus on what was happening to him so much. But in real life, that was part of my question. You know, why aren't we looking at any physical causes here as well, or other
things? Yeah, you know, well, that's interesting, because from my research on the topic, I saw that like brain injuries, just hitting your head, could actually lead to this.
Yeah, a lot of things seem to be able to trigger it, and they don't know yet. Nobody can test you for hoarding or anything like that. And they don't really know if there's one cause or there are many causes, but now it is a disorder on its own.
Wow. Okay. So, I've been thinking this the entire time too. Like, these are things that just, you know, like they come to my mind early in the interview, and I've been wanting to ask you this the entire interview, but if you could go back and talk to yourself, like go jump in a time machine and talk to yourself at this time, like early on, what would you say to yourself?
Probably to speak up sooner or make some demands sooner that were not negotiable. I kept giving in and saying, all right, well, we'll try this now. And he broke every deal that we ever made. And I stayed too long in that situation. And then when he did get help, I became the problem somehow. I became the alien. And this is what will happen to you in order to treat that. Well, the methods of treatment are different now. So we might've had a different outcome in the years we were looking at it. CBT, cognitive behavioral therapy was the tool of choice. And now they know they have to include some psychotherapy also to help a person. So we weren't really getting the help that we could have used, but I think I wouldn't have stayed so long. Although the reason, of course, one of the big reasons I stayed was because of my children. Yeah. I didn't want to break up the family. So if I had to look back though, I think it might've been healthier for everyone if we had had a different living arrangement, for sure. Mm-hmm. So that's what I would say to looking back at myself or someone else. Now, how do you want to live? Do you want what you have?
Yeah.
Not do you have what you want, but do you want what you have?
Yeah.
And most people who are living with a hoarder would say no. It's not what I want.
It's a great question to ask, no matter like what the situation is, whatever you're going through. Like, do you have the life that you actually want or deserve? I mean, everybody listening to this podcast should be asking that of themselves. Think about the situation that you're going through. Is it what you want to be in? You know, I did a show on quitting and how difficult quitting can be. It's not easy. It's not easy to walk away. It's sometimes a lot easier to stay. But you know what? It can be a lot better to leave at times. Great advice, I think, for anyone dealing with any situation, whether it be personal or business or whatever it is. So, Deborah, I appreciate you sharing that advice with us. I appreciate you sharing your story with us. And your book, it's available. I'm assuming it's available everywhere, right?
It's available everywhere. Actually, my website will have a link to that, to Amazon. So I would say just go to Amazon, and if you search for The Hoarder's Wife or my name, it should come up there.
Deborah, it has been fantastic. Again, thank you for joining me.
I enjoyed our talk, Russ. Thank you for having me.
As did I. And I hope you listening enjoyed our talk as well. I'm sure you did. Of course, you know what? It would be great if you would subscribe to Learning More. It'd be great if you would review Learning More on whatever platform it is that you're listening to it on right now. I want to send a special shout out to those over on Podbean listening. The listenership over on Podbean has really grown over the last couple of weeks. And that's where I host my podcast. And I appreciate all of you. There's a communication feature there where you can leave a comment on episodes. I'd love to be able to start a dialogue with you. So please do that. Just do the little comment thing on Podbean. For those listening on Podbean, you know what I'm talking about. For everyone else, you think I'm talking like code or something, but no, it should be pretty easy. And if you don't have the Podbean app, hey, go check it out. It's pretty cool. Yeah. Download that wherever you get your apps, I guess. Okay. Oh boy. As with any podcast that gives medical or legal opinion, the information is not meant to substitute professional advice. I encourage you to consult a professional to discuss your exact needs. I invite you to check out our podcast next week. Yes, it is coming out next week. The best and easiest way to find out what that is and when it's going to get there and all that fun stuff is to subscribe. So wherever you're listening right now, please do click subscribe. That way you get alerted and you just download each and every episode. That would be a great thing. And if you've got something that you want to learn more about, well, guess what? I'll help you out with that, right? Like, just let me know. Head over to learningmorepodcast.com. Tell me what it is that you'd like to see a Learning More episode on, and maybe I'll just do that. That would be fantastic. I would love to do that for you. Again, thank you for listening. Thank you for subscribing. Thank you for reviewing. I'm Russ, and I look forward to learning more with you next time.